We're just a few days away from Rosh Hashanah, and we will not be reciting a bracha on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, on the mitzvah of shofar, because we won't be fulfilling that mitzvah. So that's our topic, God willing, for tomorrow. But as Hashem, on the second day, we'll have an opportunity, thanks to the Din D'Rabbanan of Yentiv Sheni. So we'll use that opportunity to consider the nature of the mitzvah, which seems to be reflected in the bracha. And what exactly that bracha is a topic of machlokes, and the assumption is that the bracha and its debated points has something to say about what the mitzvah is. So without getting into the question right now of how the bracha is structured with al or le, which is its own discussion, but what verb is used in the bracha was itself a machlokas. Should the bracha focus on shmia or tkia? So this was a machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the Bahag. And this was quoted in the Rush in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, whether the bracha should focus on tkia or shmia. And the Rush assumes that that's the nature of the machlokas. Is the mitzvah of shofar focused on shmia or tkia? And the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Shofar, weighs in on this machlokes also. And the Rambam is quite clear in his opinion that the mitzvah is a mitzvah of shmia. So what seems to emerge right off is that we have a machlokes, apparently, as to a basic question here, as to what is the mitzvah of shofar? Is the mitzvah to hear it, or is the mitzvah to blow the shofar? Now, if you say that the mitzvah is to hear the shofar and not to blow the shofar, so then we have a pretty fundamental difficulty. What's that? Can you tell me what the difficulty is? If we say the mitzvah is in the shmiya and not in the tekiya, something seems difficult. Yeah, did you?
So then how could the bracha al tekiya shofar?
Well, that's the question. So if we say the bracha isn't on the tekiya, but the bracha is on the shmiya, which is the machlokes, right? So let's say we assume that the bracha tells us what it's about. So let's say you take the position that it's about the shmiya. So then there's something else that is challenging. Yeah.
Why don't we all individually say the bracha?
Not necessarily, because that we can also accept. But there's another halachic detail that seems perplexing if we say the mitzvah is shmiya. Well, the question is, so why do we care then who blows shofar? That if the mitzvah is in the hearing, so then let the shofar be blown by anyone. Why does it matter who blows the shofar? And we know the halacha that it does. And we know the halacha that the shofar has to be blown by what we call a bar chiyuva, by somebody who is chayiv in shofar, by which we would mean somebody who is chayiv in mitzvahs in general. So it has to be a Jewish adult. And not only that, because since shofar is also a mitzvah sasei, shazman and grama, so therefore it's also a mitzvah that women are peturos from. So therefore it has to be a Jewish adult male. So why? Why do we care if the mitzvah is in the shmiya, not in the tekiya? So then why does it matter who does the blowing? So as we'll see over the next few minutes, there are a number of ways to explain it. And of course, the easiest way to explain it is just to take the other view. So if one understood that indeed the bracha should be on the tekiah, So then that answers the question. So then the mitzvah is on the tekiah, and that's why the bracha focuses on that, and that's why we care who does it. So then the question would be, well, then how come the rest of us don't do it? How come we have only one person per shul doing it? So then we'll have to assume that there's some kind of a shlichus model that is in play. But if it seems like the majority view, and it's the way the Rambam holds, if it seems like the majority view is that it's on the Shmia, so then why do we care who is blowing the shofar? So there are a few possible approaches. Yeah, you're wrong.
Who's on the portion or the other side of the Machlokas?
So you have Rabbeinu Tam, for example, saying that it's the Shmia that the Rush quotes, or saying that the language of the Bracha, to be more specific, or the language of the Bracha is on Tekiah rather. And that's what he says also in the Sefer Yashar. And the Bahag, that it's on Shmia, and the Rambam, and Mishneh Torah, that it's on Shmia, and also on his Tshuvas. So, why do we care if it's, why do we care who does the blowing? And that we know for sure, it's a Mishnah, that the shofar has to be blown by a Bar Chiyuva. So, why do we care? So, if you were to take the position that it's the tekiah, that's the mitzvah, so fine, so then that's the answer. But, if you take the position, like the other Rishonim, that it is the Shmia that is the mitzvah, so then where does tekiah fit in? And why does it have to be a person who's chayim the mitzvah who's doing the tekiah? Eric?
Can a dead person blow shofar?
So that's a good question of itself, right? So it sounds like it's a problem, because, or at least for him to be yotzei, because the Mishnah, one of the rayas that the Rush brings, when he quotes this machlokes, so the Rush says that you see that the mitzvah is in the Shmiah, because the Mishnah says that it's possible that even the person who is blowing the shofar himself may not necessarily be yotzei the mitzvah. Because the Mishnah requires that you hear the kol shofar specifically and not a echo. And that Mishnah describes the person who's blowing the shofar as having to hear the sound of the shofar itself. So the Rush says, there you have it, that it seems like the mitzvah is specifically on the Shmiah, and that even the person who's doing the tekiah has this requirement that he might not be in fulfillment if he hears the kol havara, if he hears the echo, rather than the sounds of the shofar. Now, parenthetically, it's not our subject for today, but that Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah is highly relevant for a number of things, but that is one of the major sources that's invoked in the discussion about microphones and other electronic technology in the usage of mitzvos such as shofar and the like. And the question of, can you fulfill mitzvos that require hearing something through a microphone, a telephone, Zoom, other such things. And of course, that the Zoom became particularly relevant. COVID, you recall, hit right before Purim, so this was one of the first shilas that came up. You hear Megillah over Zoom. So it's not our topic for today, but just as a footnote, so many assume that this Mishnah is highly relevant, because the Mishnah says that when you listen to the shofar, you have to hear the shofar itself and not the kol havara, and not the sound of the echo. So if somebody is blowing a shofar in a pit, somebody is standing inside a pit and he blows a shofar, so then we have to ascertain that he hears the shofar specifically and not the echo that might be sounded in the pit. So the assumption many poskim have, many but not all, this is a major machlokas, but many poskim take the position that a microphone, for example, is comparable to an echo, because the microphone does not actually transmit the sound. It's not physically what happens, but it recreates the sound. So therefore, just like a echo is recreating the sounds, so too, that's what the electronic technology is doing, and therefore it's no better than hearing the echo. So it's a major machlokes if that's true or not, even though that does seem to be the dominant position nowadays, but there is a whole history of debate about that. And without getting into, it's really a tangential point, but just without getting into some of the details, but among the disputed points are whether this Mishnah really should be applied to all other uses of technology, let's say for Megillah and the like, because two points where it could break down. One is the assumption that it's about everything and not just shofar. There's some who argue that this may be a unique halacha to shofar, which requires a certain type of shmia. And the second point where it might break down is that maybe we shouldn't take it as a given that the echo here is a perfect reproduction of the sound. Maybe it's a distorted reproduction of the sound. And maybe if you had electronic technology that did reproduce the sound in a perfect or close to perfect way, maybe we wouldn't have such a psul. So there is some debate about this, but again, the much more commonly taken view is that this Mishnah creates great problems for using electronic technology to fulfill mitzvos that require hearing. So again, that's a whole other discussion. Happy to get into some of the other details at a different time, but that's just a footnote on it. But the Rush quotes it here to make the point that you see, at least regarding shofar, that indeed the mitzvah seems to be on the shmia, and that even if you are yourself doing the blowing of the shofar, so you may not be in fulfillment if you don't actually hear it yourself. So, just parenthetically, why is that the case, if that's the assumption? So, how does that tie into the theme of the mitzvah? Rabbi Ganak has a piece about this in his Sefer Gan Shoshanim, where he connects this to an often quoted statement of the Rambam in Hilchus Tshuva, where the Rambam says that even though shofar, we don't necessarily have to figure out the tamei hamitzvos, but he says that even though it's a gzeira, it's a dimin haTorah that could have its own depths that are beyond us, but remez yeshbo, there is something that we can associate with it, and that it is a alarm clock of a sort, and that it's supposed to wake us up spiritually. It's supposed to have a theme of Uru Yesheinu Mishenaschem, wake up those of you who are asleep. And therefore, if that's what's happening, so it's supposed to hit us from the outside. So even if you are the one blowing the shofar, still, that's the relationship that you're supposed to have, that it's as if the sound is coming at you, and that's the purpose of the mitzvah, so it should be defined by its shmia reaction, even for those who happen to be the ones actually generating the sound themselves. So you really had a question?
Yeah, what about analog audio systems?
Right, to get to the details of
like RCA cables, or then even phonographs, which are actual physical reconstructions of the data.
Those are great questions, so we can't get into all the details of the practicalities of the technology. So it's all a big footnote for a different time. Just wanted to mention that that Mishnah is the main marmokom, really, for the whole discussion. To what extent is there a correlation between that technology and what that Mishnah describes?
So, question on the Rambam: how does the Rambam's remez fit with the view of shofar during tefillah about shofar being our voice calling out to Hashem?
So that's, I think, is also part of why the Rambam says remez yeshbo, the point that he didn't want to limit it to that one meaning. So there are indeed quite a few themes and kavanos that are associated with the shofar. So it's interesting in general because we do, especially the Rambam, he certainly didn't shy away from exploring tamei hamitzvos. So I imagine that his language there is to say that we shouldn't try to think that we are totally encapsulating everything about shofar in that one statement, probably to address your question. But one aspect of it is this remez, that's an alarm clock theme. So therefore, maybe that is particularly represented by it coming from the outside. So we haven't yet answered our question, though, that if we take the position that it's Shmia, so why do we care that it's got to come from a Bar Chiyuva? So this was discussed by the Shagas Aryeh and many other of the early Achronim. And they simply formulated it. Basically, it's the formulation is really kind of a restatement of the question, but in the Chanarmi, maybe the question is its own answer. And that is that the nature of the mitzvah is Shmia, okay, but it is Shmia of something. So what is it? What is it that you have to hear? So what you have to hear, apparently, is a kol shel chiyuv, a kol shel mitzvah. Right? Which, understandably, it's not just hearing anything, it's hearing something. So what is it that you have to hear? You have to hear a sound that has a mitzvah status to it, and it has to be, therefore, generated by somebody who is chayev. It's interesting, just some distinctions about that. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva where he notes that there's a difference in the language of the Torah, that if you have a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, and somebody who's half slave and half free, which really doesn't exist, the Gemara says, because they wouldn't allow such a situation to continue. So he's really basically an nafkamina man, just a theoretical person to exist for nafkaminas. But a theoretical chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin. So in Hilchos Shofar, it says that because the eved is putter from mitzvah seisha as man grama, just like Anisha, so Anisha cannot blow shofar for the tzibor because she is putter from shofar. So she cannot be motzi the men in the tzibor. So too, an eved also can. So a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin also cannot blow shofar because he's half chayiv and half pater. So therefore, the half pater part can't blow on behalf of the half chayiv part. But he still has to hear from somebody else because the half chayiv part has to hear. So he has to have somebody else blow for him, but he can't be the one blowing because he needs to hear a kol shel chayiv and he's not capable of generating. But in Hilchos Megillah, so you don't find that mentioned. That he has, you don't find that the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin has to have somebody else read Megillah for him. So, I believe Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank discusses this in a Shuvah, and the one answer was that, well, maybe they just rely on what was already pointed out in Hilchos Shofar. But the other approach is that, no, there's a difference between Megillah and Shofar. That Megillah, the mitzvah, is Kriya. The obligation is everyone is supposed to read the Megillah. And it's just that the fact that we don't all read the Megillah ourselves is because we use Shomei Kaone. So we have one person in Shul read on behalf of everyone else. And that's how we all fulfill our personal obligation of reading the Megillah. So if a Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin were to read the Megillah himself, so he would fulfill his mitzvah because he'd be doing it himself. So that would be fine. But if he would be blowing shofar himself, that's not the same thing. He wouldn't be in fulfillment because the mitzvah is Shmia, and he's not able to fulfill that through his own blowing of the shofar because he can't generate a kol shel chiyuv because he's half putter, and therefore he dafka needs somebody else to blow shofar that he can use for his half chayiv part to be yotze. So again, this doesn't have any real practical applications because we don't have avadim anymore either. We don't have chatzi avadim, chatzi ben chorin at all. Gemara says it wouldn't allow that to continue. But again, nafkamina man, so it's an interesting theoretical possibility. So another question that was asked about this is that the Gemara says that sukkahs ganbach is kosher, that if you have a sukkah that was constructed by somebody who is putter, so that sukkah is actually valid. So what's the difference? Why is it that when it comes to shofar, we require that even though the mitzvah is in the listening to the kol, but we require that the kol be generated by somebody who's chayiv, should be a kol shel mitzvah. So you could think that there's a parallel to sukkah. So sukkah, there's a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah. So maybe we should say, okay, you should sit in a sukkah shel chiyuv. The sukkah should be generated by somebody who's chayiv. But apparently not. Apparently, there is no such requirement. So what's the difference? You want to address that?
Well, yeah, because I know you have to get a new sukkah every year because that's be l'shem mitzvah sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
So how could someone who's not chiyuv, maybe a non-Jew, how would they make a sukkah l'shem mitzvah sukkah?
So that's a good question of itself, and that maybe we'll talk about at sukkah's time.
Right.
But that the Gemara says that a sukkah's gambach is kasher, and what exactly it takes to make it l'shem sukkah is its own discussion. But why does it not have the same requirement as shofar? So that's itself a good question. And I saw one sefer that suggested, Shlomo Zalman Shmai is the author of a few interesting svarim, and he suggests that there is still a difference between shofar and sukkah, in that once the sukkah is built, so it stands on its own, so it has its own independent kiyum. But shofar, so the kol shofar cannot stand on its own, so it only exists because it's constantly being generated. So therefore, it has a ongoing association with the one blowing it. So therefore, its status as a kol shel mitzvah is connected to its chiyuv person. Perhaps, I mean, I don't know if that totally explains it, but that's one suggestion. Yes, sir.
I don't know if there's anything here, but I mean, I guess I'll suggest it. I know that when it comes to like kosher, you do it. You only really trust someone who also keeps kosher to make you kosher food, unless it's for other things. Maybe we only trust those who are actually chayav mitzvah in doing it the right way.
But you could see if it's being done the right way here, because you could just watch. So
how do I know it's a ram farm? Maybe it's a cow farm or something.
But you could also check the shofar yourself.
Do we do that?
You could. I mean, so you don't necessarily have an aspect of trust that's inherent here. So that's not inherently the issue. Yeah?
A little different. In Shkita, if someone says that it's a good Shkita, that this is a kosher animal, aren't you allowed to trust that just based on his word?
Yeah, we don't have a trust issue here, so that doesn't seem to be
just
the...
Like, for Eric's question.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be the answer.
Maybe like a real shokit, and others are like, yeah, like just...
No.
But I think we're going down the wrong path here because this doesn't seem to be the issue. So some other explanation. So far we have two possible approaches. Ultimately, we're going to have six approaches just to give you a little bit of a roadmap. So one approach is, if you take the view that tekiah is the mitzvah, we're trying to figure out where tekiah fits in. Right? How does tekiah have a requirement of a bar chiyuva here? So one answer is, if you take the view tekiah is the mitzvah. Second answer is, according to the more commonly accepted idea that shmiyah is the mitzvah, but maybe you need to have the shmiyah of a kol shel mitzvah, so it has to be a bar chiyuva in order to create that kol shel mitzvah. The third and fourth approach are going to be really similar in a sense, but they're going to reflect two different traditions in learning. And maybe they're different, maybe they're similar, depending on how you relate to it. So you can judge whether you consider them to be similar or different. But they're going to be formulated in the traditions of two different, the language of two different traditions in learning. But the first is, as Rav Schechter presents it in his Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, quoting from Rav Soloveitchik, in the Brisker tradition. So he quotes a approach from Rav Soloveitchik which really reinterprets the machlokas about the bracha. So we're learning brachos here, so I wanted to pick specifically a brachos topic. So we could have titled this year the mitzvah of shofar, or we could have titled it the bracha of shofar. So here, this is really where the difference hinges. So if we start off talking about the bracha, so the assumption of the Rush, is that the bracha reflects a certain attitude about the mitzvah. But maybe the bracha reflects a different kind of question. So the machlokes about whether the bracha should be on shmiyah or tekiah, suggested of Soloveitchik, maybe it's not taking two sides on whether the mitzvah is shmiyah or tekiah, it's one or the other. But maybe they both agree, both views about what the bracha is. Maybe they both agree as to how the mitzvah is formulated, but they argue about the nature of how a bracha is applied. And that's the machlokas. And this relates a little bit to what Rav Rosenzweig was discussing this morning. And it addresses the following assumption, that in general, almost all mitzvos, there is a action, a maisa ha-mitzvah, and there is a kiyum ha-mitzvah, that the mitzvah is also fulfilled. And in almost all mitzvos, those are really the same thing. They happen together. You do something, let's say you pick up a lulav, that's the maisa ha-mitzvah, and through doing that, you fulfill the mitzvah, that's the kiyum ha-mitzvah. But there are a small number of mitzvos that there's a distinction between the two. So, like we heard, tshuva might be an example of that. Right? That it could be that there's a kiyum of tshuva that is internal, but there is a action like vidui that needs to be done in order to trigger that internal fulfillment of the mitzvah. So there's only a handful that are like that, although Tishrei might be lopsided in terms of how many mitzvahs it has like that. So tshuva maybe, and maybe also Simchas Yontif, the whole idea that we have meals on Yontif, and we say that's Simchas Yontif, but really that's not what the whole Simchas Yontif is about. Simchas Yontif is really a internal kiyum of how you feel, but the maisa ha-mitzvah is doing things to bring about that attitude. So the maisa ha-mitzvah might be things like eating, and the kiyum ha-mitzvah is what kind of atmosphere that creates, what kind of internal atmosphere that creates. So maybe, again, to Tishrei being particularly heavy with these kind of concepts, so maybe shofar has a similar structure. That maybe shofar, you have a maisa and a kiyum. That perhaps, yes, the kiyum ha-mitzvah comes in the shmir, which is consistent with that whole point before about the Rambam and the alarm clock, that the real theme of the mitzvah and the message of the mitzvah does indeed come with hearing the shofar. That could still be true. But something has to be done in order to create that effect. So the maisa ha-mitzvah is the tikiyah. But the kiyum is in the shmiyah. And maybe all the Rishonim could agree to that. And the machlokes about the bracha is a machlokes in how does a bracha get formulated when you have something such as that. So should the bracha address the maisa ha-mitzvah, that being the tkiyah, or should it address the kiyum ha-mitzvah, that being the shmiyah? And maybe that's what the Rishonim were arguing about. And in this essay, in Eretz Tzvi, so Rav Schechter goes on to, again, quoting Rav Soloveitchik, to give a few other nafkaminas of that relationship specifically, that there is a focus, at least within the Rambam, as the kiyum ha-mitzvah specifically being on Shmiya, even if the Maisa HaMitzvah might be on the Tekiyah. So one of the more complex but interesting nafkaminas has to do with the concept of Mitzvah HaBabi Avera. So here, just to take a minute to explain, it's somewhat of a complicated idea, but we have a notion of a Mitzvah HaBabi Avera, that when you perform an Avera, at the same time as you perform a mitzvah, you do a mitzvah in a transgressive way. So that knocks out the mitzvah. So what does that mean that it knocks out the mitzvah? So here, there's a little bit of a complicated point, but try to follow. There is a Tosfos in Sukkah and Daf Tes that asks the following question, that the Gemara has a pasuk. Gemara has a drash on a pasuk to say that a stolen sukkah is no good. So Tosfos asks the question, why do I need a pasuk to tell me a stolen sukkah is no good? I already know that mitzvah habavi avera, so I can't steal a sukkah. Why do I need a pasuk for that? So Tosfos suggests maybe mitzvah habavi avera is a din d'rabana, and the pasuk tells me on a level min haTorah, etc., etc. You have a question about that? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we could apply what we said before, but about if someone, like a guy, whatever, sets it up for you, it's mm-hmm. the same thing. Once you have it, now it stands on its own. Same thing. Like once you stole it, now it's on its own. It's not even considered stolen.
So maybe the status changes.
Maybe the status changes. It's like he built it. Now it's a sukkah. You stole it. Now it's a sukkah.
Perhaps. Right. So the Minchas Chinuch has a different approach, which the Briskers and Salvechik kind of briskified the answer. So it basically goes like this, that there is a distinction you could draw like this, that if all you had was a din of mitzvah habavi avera, so that would mean that if I sat in a solon sukkah on sukkahs, so, okay, mitzvah habavi avera means that I would not fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah. But we know, when we talk about sukkah, on sukkahs, that I have to eat in a sukkah when I have my meals. And not only that, but if I were to eat inside the house, the way we look at it is not only am I missing a mitzvah opportunity, but we see that as a bittul mitzvah. We see that as basically like an avera to eat in a house on sukkahs. So says the Minchas Chinuch that if I were to eat in a stolen sukkah and all I had was a din of mitzvah habavi avera, so that would mean, okay, there's no mitzvah I'm accomplishing. But it's not like I was eating in my living room. It would be like I'm eating in a sukkah, but there's no mitzvah. But the pasuk comes and tells you that a stolen sukkah is garnished. It's no better than eating in your living room. So to briskify that, so the way the Rav explained is that what does mitzvah habavi avera do? So mitzvah habavi avera, the idea is that it knocks out a kiyum hamitzvah. There's no way to say I fulfilled God's will, I fulfilled a mitzvah, when at the same time I also contradicted His will. I did an avera, and I also was makayim hamitzvah. That's a contradiction in terms. They can't both be the case. So you cannot fulfill a mitzvah when you're doing it through an avera. But it doesn't negate reality. So if there's a maisa hamitzvah that happens to also be an avera, the maisa hamitzvah is still that maisa. It just loses its kiyum value. So in the case of applied to a sukkah, let's say, so what the Minchas Chinuch means, if all we're talking about here is the concept of mitzvah habavi avera, so your stolen sukkah, there'd be no mitzvah points for that. Because to call that a kiyum hamitzvah when it's done through an avera, so the mitzvah points would be canceled out. But it's still a sukkah. Because the maisa, the fact, the reality of the sukkah is not going to be canceled out by the avera. So it's not like you're eating in your living room. You're still eating in a sukkah. So the drasha of a stolen sukkah being no good, that means it's not even a sukkah now. That's like your living room. So what you can extract from this point is that a avera negates a kiyum hamitzvah, but it doesn't have any impact on a maisa hamitzvah, because that's not the nature of what mitzvah habavi avera is doing. So now, to apply that to shofar. So when it comes to a stolen shofar, so the Rambam has an interesting formulation, which other Rishonim didn't agree with. Some other Rishonim didn't agree with. Some thought Davka quite the opposite. But the Rambam basically says that mitzvah habavi avera doesn't apply to shofar for technical reasons. Not that it's good to steal a shofar. Don't get the wrong message here. We're very against tilling shofars. And adarabah, there were some Rishonim who thought that mitzvah babi averi applies uniquely to shofar. Because it sounds like from the Talmud Bavli, for example, that mitzvah babi averi is especially relevant when a mitzvah is not just a normal mitzvah, but it's about trying to appease God. In which case, shofar should really be more relevant to mitzvah habavi averi than the average mitzvah. But nonetheless, the Rambam has a position which really, for technical reasons, excludes shofar from mitzvah habavi averi. Why? Because, he says, the Rambam, that if you were to steal a shofar and blow that shofar, so the mitzvah is not really in the blowing. The mitzvah is in the sound that comes out of the shofar. And, says the Rambam, in a line that's somewhat similar but different to what we said about the Mishnah and its application to modern technology, this line of the Rambam has also been used for application to some questions of modern technology. So the Rambam says that you can't apply mitzvah habavi avera to the sound because it says, ein b'kol din gazel. Right? Maybe the shofar was stolen, but the sound wasn't stolen. So, technical reasons, again, here you're not a tzaddik in this case, but to apply the status of stolen to the sound is not going to, again, for purely technical reasons, is not going to apply. Hi?
But isn't that against essentially everything we've set up until now about mice mitzvah and the necessity to have a person blowing the shofar? Like, what does that mean that the coal can't be, like, the coal can't be stolen, but it still comes from the shofar in the same way that we wouldn't accept some other type of horn as a shofar? Even if it makes the exact same sound, even if I could imitate a shofar perfectly, like, it still has to come from a shofar. So the fact that it's stolen shofar should be just as necessary as the fact that it has to be a shofar.
Ashkafically, you're saying that you're right, that in essence, it's very hard.
I'm saying halakhically.
Well, ashkafically, it's very hard to distinguish. It's a highly, highly technical point. It is a purely technical point that is very hard to distinguish in any kind of philosophical level. But in a very, very purely technical sense, assuming that at least the way it's presented in certain sugyas in the Bavli, that mitzvah habavi averi attaches to a stolen object. So here, the sound itself is not going to have a status of stolen. So within the Rambam's position, that the sound is where the mitzvah item is, so it escapes the status of stolen. Again, it is a purely technical point, and not recommending this, but it's just an example of the idea that the Rambam's view that the Kiyum HaMitzvah is found in the sound. So, in any event, so this would give us the third position in terms of what's the role of Tekiah here, and why do we care about how the Tekiah is happening? So, here we'll say now, a third way of seeing it, this position associated with the Soloveitchik and the whole Brisker tradition, that it is part of the mitzvah, actually. But it is the Maisa HaMitzvah, while Shmiah is the Kiyum HaMitzvah. So that now gives us three ways to look at it. And again, this way is very significant because it's a departure from the assumption that the bracha is completely correlated to the mitzvah, and that the machlokas about the bracha is a machlokas about what the mitzvah is. Here, this is a very different take on it. The machlokas is not about what the mitzvah is, and that everyone agrees according to this interpretation as to what the mitzvah is. Machlokas is how should the bracha be formulated, even if we agree what the mitzvah is. Hi.
Just go back. How is the Rambam's mitzvah of Avera point relevant to the Maisa Riskiyam?
Because if you say that the way a mitzvah babi avera works is that it negates a kiyum hamitzvah, so it means that when you break the shofar down, the maisa is on the shofar and the kiyum is in the call. So since mitzvah babi avera only does its damage on a kiyum, so the kiyum is only relevant to the sound, and the sound is just immune to being stolen.
Wouldn't you be Yose if you heard a stolen shofar?
That's the Rambam's position, right? Because for technical reasons, because the sound can't have the status of stolen, And the sound is where the kiyum is. You're mekayim the mitzvah with the sound, and the sound doesn't have the status of stone. So it's a highly technical point.
Okay.
Now, similar to the Mishnah, that line, Ein b'kol din gazel, is invoked in some contemporary literature about intellectual property and downloading songs and things like that, whether it's relevant or not. But that's also been invoked in that context. So now, what I said before about approach 3 and 4, whether they're different or the same, so you tell me. So that was, we just said, is in the Brisker tradition. So there is an approach in the Sacha Traber tradition, which is similar. Maybe you'll consider it very similar. So the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva where he explains in the following way. And he says that essentially, so here for some synergy, so less than a week ago, so we mentioned this point in Parshas Shir. So we talked about the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, if you recall. And we talked about the fact, we mentioned this specific point, if you remember, that apparently the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah requires ultimately a goal of owning the Sefer Torah. And yet it distinguishes between Yerusha and purchase. And the Mincha Srinach discussed the question, why should that be? They both are identical in terms of the end result. They both end up with your owning something. So why does it matter whether you purchase something or you inherit something? And he explained that every mitzvah needs to have you do something, that it can't just happen automatically. And we emphasized last week that Yerusha ideally should not happen through a maisa, should be something that happens to you only passively. So even though the end result of Yerusha and purchase both end up with your being in possession of something, but purchase happens because you did something to obtain something, and that's considered to be the action as opposed to Yerusha. So says the Avnei Nezer, it's essentially the same thing here, that when it comes to shofar, so really the mitzvah is about hearing. That's really what all the hashkafa of shofar can be connected to, the sound of the shofar. But if that's all we would look at, it's really a passive experience. You just stand in the room and you hear the shofar. So we need something active to be associated with it. So that's where the blowing of the shofar comes in. So ultimately, that's like the purchasing of the Sefer Torah, or the writing of the Sefer Torah, which is the active stage that gets you to the passive goal of owning the Sefer Torah. So when we have to formulate the bracha, so the bracha could really be about either. You could make the bracha on the tekiah, because that becomes a part of the mitzvah too. Or you could have made the bracha on shmiyah. So, but we'd rather make the bracha on shmiyah, because that reflects what the mitzvah is really about. That reflects what we really see as the hashkafa of the mitzvah. So, says the Avnei Nezer, based on that, so he discusses an interesting point there that was disputed. So there is a hanhaga that we have nowadays that when the bracha is recited on the shofar, so there is a practice that the Baal Tekiah, as he recites the bracha, he covers the shofar up with his talis. So where does that come from? So the Avnei Nezer suggests that maybe this is comparable to one of my favorite dinim to talk about, that Friday night when you make kiddush on wine, so you cover up the challahs at that time. Why? Because really you could have chosen to make kiddush on the challah, but instead, if you choose to make kiddush on the wine instead, So we don't want to offend or embarrass the challahs. So we cover up the challah. It shouldn't see that you are choosing instead to make kiddush on the wine. Which, as we emphasize in other contexts, that is a midos building lesson, so that when we deal with human beings, we will be careful in sensitivity in how we deal with them. So, suggests the Avnei Nezer, it's a similar thing here, that when you're making the bracha regarding the mitzvah of shofar, so you prefer to make the bracha on the shmiya of the shofar, on the sound that comes out of the shofar, because that is where the real hashkafa of the shofar is identified. But you could have also chosen to make the bracha on the tekiah, because the tekiah is also a part of the mitzvah. And that's the part that's associated with the shofar itself. So because that also could have gotten the bracha, so to speak, so when you make the bracha, you're passing over the shofar for the sound, just as like when you make kiddush, you're passing over the challah for the wine. So therefore, you should cover up the challah at that time when you make the bracha, just as you cover up the challah when you make the kiddush over the wine. That's what the Avnei Nezer suggests in this tshuva. So there was machlokas about this. You know, probably two of the greatest of the Chassidish poskim, the Chassidish rabbis who wrote tshuvas lahalacha, were on the one hand the Avnei Nezer, and another was the Munkacha Rebbe, the Minchas Elazar. So the Minchas Elazar has a tshuva where he very strongly disagrees with this Avnei Nezer. He doesn't think that that's the pshat at all on this minig, and he says that that's really why you were doing that, so you should cover up the shofar blower, not the shofar itself. And he has other reasons for it. It's based on the Akedah, and he doesn't think that that's the explanation. So this is the Sachashever way of saying it. Again, maybe it's not really different than the Brisker way, but it's just used in Sachashever language. But that's another way of looking at it, really very similar to the Brisker formulation, that essentially the Maisa HaMitzvah is the Tekiah, and the Kiyum HaMitzvah is in the Shmiah, and the Bracha is focusing here on the Shmiah. And again, just maybe minor differences in presentation, but a very similar idea. A fifth approach is conveyed by the Yom Truah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah and the Ksav Sofer in the Tshuva, is that it is the most maybe mundane of the approaches, is you could simply say that they are both from the mitzvah, and that therefore, that's the explanation. Why is it that you have a requirement of who it is who is blowing the shofar? Because they're both relevant, and therefore, that's going to impact this halacha. And then again, so then how do you explain why there is a machlokas about the bracha? So it's going to be influenced perhaps by other factors. A sixth possible explanation that you could bring. So this goes to, we can borrow a concept that was invoked in the context of sukkah. So there was a discussion, which the Netziv has in his commentary to the Shultas Rav Chaigon, the Heimek Sha'ala, that the Netziv innovated their concept. It seems to be Mechadish a concept, which is quoted in many other Sfarim. In general, when it comes to religious activities, so we have often two categories. So we have that which is an actual mitzvah, something which is specifically mandated as an inherently obligatory act. And then you have something that you need to do in order to be able to have everything in place to perform that mitzvah. So that we would call a hechsher mitzvah. But the Netziv posits there that there's also an in-between category. That there are some actions which are not full mitzvos, and they're really preparatory acts, but they have a higher status because they are mentioned in the Pesukim. So that's what you would call a Hechsher Mitzvah HaKesuvah B'Kra. So it is a preparatory act which is mentioned in the Torah. And he basically understands that that has a quasi-mitzvah status. So it's more than just something that you do beforehand. It has certain nafkaminas of being like a mitzvah too. So what might be among those nafkaminas? So for example, would you say mitzvah bo yosu mi b'shlucha? So would you say that there is any value in your doing it personally rather than just have your assistant take care of it for you in advance? So is that a concept, if you assume that it's a concept which is specifically about actual mitzvos, so could you extend it to something that is a preparation for a mitzvah, a heksher mitzvah? So this is one of the things that Tziv says, that if it's a heksher mitzvah, haksuva b'kra, so then it has this quasi-mitzvah status, and you could say that's an afkamina. Also, it says the question of a bracha, that there might be a relevance of a bracha to something which has this in-between kind of status, that it's not necessarily a full mitzvah, but it is a heksher mitzvah haksuva b'kra. So he applies this to the context of sukkah, because maybe we'll have a chance to talk about this before sukkah, so maybe not, but that's itself a whole debate. How exactly do we look at the notion of constructing a sukkah? Because it doesn't sound like that itself is actually its own mitzvah. That we know that we have a mitzvah to live in the sukkah over sukkahs, and it's not going to happen unless we have a mitzvah, we have a sukkah put into place before sukkahs. But it doesn't necessarily sound like we have a specific mitzvah to construct the sukkah. So how do you view the act of constructing a sukkah before sukkahs? So is it a mitzvah? Some sources sound a little bit like it is, but it's not so clear from the Torah. Or do we say that it's simply a heksher mitzvah? It doesn't have any actual mitzvah status. So that's where the Nitziv posits that maybe it's in between, that it has the status of a heksher mitzvah, haksuva b'kra. So one could perhaps suggest that that might be a fitting category also for tkiyas shofar. That if we say that the real mitzvah is shmiyas shofar, but we're not sure what to do with tkiyah, so maybe that's the best category for it, that it's clearly necessary to have a tkiyas shofar in order for there to be the mitzvah of shmiyas shofar. So would you say that it's simply a hechsher without anything more to it? Or perhaps no, maybe it has the special status of a quasi-mitzvah, of a hechsher mitzvah k'suva b'kra. Torah talks about the Yom Truah, so it's a day when there's Truah happening, but doesn't make it clear that that's its own commandment. So maybe that's what it is. It is a Hechsher Mitzvah K'suvah B'Kra, and that could be the mysterious status that Tkiyas Shofar could have vis-a-vis everything else. Eric, you had a question?
No question.
Okay, so basically that's what we wanted to bring out, that essentially through the prism of the bracha. And this is also one of the major messages for our topics this year, even though Berachas HaMitzvah is less addressed in Maseches Brachos, although, as we discussed the other day, the Rambam does link strongly the concept of Berachas HaMitzvah to Berachas HaNenin, but the idea that Berachas HaMitzvah is a concept which draws a lot from Berachas HaNenin and its function, but also Berachas HaMitzvos are very helpful for us in terms of the mitzvah experience. Some of the Rishonim understand that Berachas HaMitzvah are to help us have kavana before a mitzvah, and we also find that the way they are formulated, sometimes they are explicit in the Gemara, sometimes they're not, sometimes there's a machlokas in the Gemara, sometimes there's a machlokas after the Gemara. But the formulation of Berachas HaMitzvah is often very relevant to understanding the nature of the mitzvah itself. And this is indeed one such case where, even without the Gemara being explicit about it, but the Rishonim debating, yields a lot of insight into possible approaches to the mitzvah itself. And, of course, brachos overall, whether they are brachos on mitzvahs or brachos on food or brachos on other things, the formulation of the bracha has a lot to tell us about the world and how we're supposed to be mesachis to it. So this is yet another example. And the idea that Gemara tells us that from a person's brachos you can tell whether they're a Talmud Chacham or not. So here, too, you see how the choice of what bracha to make on this mitzvah can contain quite a lot of information about just what kind of lumdus and analysis one brings to this mitzvah. So just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we saw there is a machlokes rishonim, whether the bracha on shofar should refer to shmia or to tkia. And as the Rosh understands, it seems to be they're arguing about whether the mitzvah is tkia or shmia. And then the question is, so how do we deal with the fact that we know that the Gemara does have requirements for who can be doing the tekiah? Which, if that's the case, it sounds like there is a mitzvah of tekiah. So how do you deal with that? So we said basically six approaches to what is the role of tekiah in the mitzvah of shofar. One approach is to say it is the mitzvah, according to those Rishonim who associate the bracha with that. That's one. The second approach, maybe the more common approach, to say the mitzvah is shmia, but it has to be a kol shel chiyuv. So you need to be a bar chiyuva in order to generate that. The third approach was the Rav Shecht, according to the Rav, the Brisker approach, to say that everyone agrees to the structure that there's a maisa ha-mitzvah of tekiah and a kiyum ha-mitzvah in shmia. And the machlokas is, does a bracha go on a maisa or a kiyum? And we saw also how that affects the question of mitzvah habavi aveira, which eats away at a kiyum, but not necessarily at a maisa. And then we saw maybe similar, maybe different approach to the Avnei Nezer in the Sacher Chaver language that says that really the mitzvah is about shmiah, but every mitzvah has to have some physical act associated with it, and we compared that to acquiring a Sefer Torah, which just inheriting it is too passive, so you have to buy one, even though it results in the same thing as inheriting. And so when it comes to shofar, really it's about hearing it, but there's got to be a physical act connected to it. So when you make the bracha, it could have been on either tekiah or shmia, but we choose shmia because it's more reflective of what the mitzvah is about, and we cover up the shofar during the bracha because we're passing up the tekiah, the shofar itself, just as we cover up the chalas when kiddush is made because we're passing up the chalas for the wine. And the Minchas Elazar didn't like that explanation, and he gave his own explanation. And then the fifth answer was that they're just both partners in the mitzvah. And the sixth answer was to apply the Nitziv's idea of Hechsher Mitzvah Ksuvah Bekra. So maybe that's what Tekiah is. It's this in-between status. It's not the mitzvah, that Shmia, but it's also not just a preparation. It's a step above because it's mentioned in the Torah, and therefore there are various nafkaminas, mitzvah-like nafkaminas, that could apply. Okay, so we'll stop with that. And God willing, tomorrow, again, the topic of shofar on Shabbos, or lack of same, and some angles on that.